Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. Me, I am Paul Machin. I'm alongside Chloe Boxham and Dan Clough. No Chris Pajak this week. He's a little poorly. Been under the weather, so we've let him have the time off. He was like, I can make it in the afternoon if needs be. And I was like, no, because nobody wants his leggy. But send some positive messages for support. Put some happiness out into the ether. Just think of a healthy Chris Pajak when you're having your lunch or your tea or you're on your commute or whatever. Just think good thoughts and send them in his general direction. Good thoughts shouldn't be too hard to come by because Liverpool are, of course, absolutely unbelievable at football. We're going to be talking West Ham, Liverpool 3, West Ham 1. In part two, we're going to go back a little bit and a little chat about LASK and talk about some of Liverpool's remaining sort of issues on the pitch. Look at the back, the DM position and what have you. But that's later. Now it is Liverpool 3, Liverpool 3, West Ham 1. Chloe. Hi.
Hello.
First 15, they really gave us a game, and I think it kind of showed the difference between what David Moyes has been in his past incarnations, and it kind of shows what a good team he's got there at West Ham, really, that they were capable of coming and getting in Liverpool's face. And hey, listen, they caused us problems on another day. If they had a better striker, we're going to come on to talk about him later on, but they might have actually done us a bit more damage than they did.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams, especially from last season, believe that they can come at Liverpool straight from the off. We were even talking about it at LASK on the post-match shows. We were talking about how LASK at home aren't scared. They pressed us and Liverpool couldn't deal with that press in the first 45 minutes against LASK. And West Ham are a much better team, much well-drilled as well. And look, for 15 minutes of those games, Liverpool were in real struggle. Antonio could have had one, Suchek should have had one, but Alisson Becker makes an unbelievable save. And we were extremely close to once again going down 1-0. But Alisson Becker, my word, he just shows that he is the best in the world in his position, because he's the reason why Liverpool once again went 1-0 down in a game of football.
Yeah, and I mean, like, shades of my saving five aside the other week, that down.
I thought that was
it.
Yeah, I did think that immediately. Yeah. Mind went. Yeah, I don't know about you.
No, it's right. I mean,
never mind. It was Edda. Sorry, I can't. Antonio reminded me of you for a second, and then I was like, no, yours. Talking. You just blasted yours out the cage. Never mind. He edited it.
We will, more on that. Dan, yeah, the Alisson thing's interesting because he, like last season, he stopped us from having a catastrophic season. Mm-hmm. If he's making saves now, then that's the beauty of having the best goalie in the world. It's covering up a couple of the deficiencies in the side, but ultimately when you've got what... You don't buy a world-class goalie and then get upset when he has to make world-class saves. That's why you've got a world-class goalie.
Exactly that. And it's interesting. I kind of said a very similar thing yesterday on our poachmas stuff with Evel. It was a bit like, you almost don't want to see him called upon as often as you do and sort of asked to make these world-class saves, because if you're getting that far at our defence, something's gone wrong. And obviously, like, Virgil van Dijk always takes umbrage with the fact that he has to do defensive work, and Alisson kind of similar.
Yeah.
But you're right. You own these players and you buy the best in class for a reason. And the fact that we bought Alisson, at the time he may or may not have been the best in the world, but he certainly become that at Liverpool. There's no two ways about it. Like, the coaching that we've done with him and his personal development has made him the very best on the planet at what he does. And like you say, we own him, so he's allowed to make those saves. Like, we all kind of say, oh, Liverpool have got problems. It's like the only Mo Salah thing. Well, we have Alisson, so that's fine. He's our goalkeeper, so he's allowed to do that.
So if you didn't have Mo Salah, but they do. They pay him a lot of money to do that job. You know, it's really, really good.
And he wants more.
Yeah. Like, if Bill Gates wasn't dead clever, he wouldn't have had Microsoft, and but he was, you know, so it's fine. I think the major issue still remains is that thing, you know, is a little bit of defensive fragility. One of a bigger chat on that in part two. But what I thought was, Chloe, you mentioned it about like how they approached us. It's really interesting. I think I wonder whether Liverpool are changing their tactics in first halves a little bit, because we did. I mean, like, we effectively got West Ham on the counter attack. Now, if you told me you're gonna go a goal up because okay, a penalty, but a counter attacking situation against a David Moyes team at home, you'd be like, nope, none of that. That's science fiction writing that you're coming up with there. But I like the fact that the Liverpool did kind of stick to the guns and. They grew into the game. It was very reminiscent, I said on my post-match video, of 18-19 onwards Liverpool, where we were rarely sparkling in the first halves of games, but we'd figure the opposition out, and then second halves is when we'd kick on.
Yeah, it's a brilliant goal. I think Darwin Nunes, he needs to be talked about more, because in the last 3-4 games, his hold-up play has gone to a different level. We all know Darwin Nunes is the player who runs in behind, is always on the shoulder of the defender, but his hold-up play against Wolves was exceptional. His hold-up play against West Ham was exceptional as well, and he makes it stick. Liverpool haven't had a lot of possession. We're actually being bullied a bit, and he's the one. And I remember as soon as he brought it down, I said, just protect the ball, lad, just protect the ball, and he protects it. And then instead of going back and maybe, you know, being a bit calm with it and just not risking it, he risks it. And you see the reward when you do that. He risked a nice little ball with the outside of his foot to Luis Diaz. And his run is phenomenal as well. He creates the space. Luis Diaz doesn't quite get the ball right. I mean, it hits him on the back of the leg as he's running. There's not much, you know, Darwin Nunes can do about that. But it's the fact that Salah's also gambling. Salah's gambling that this ball is going to ricochet or be around him somewhere. And he's so fast. It's in his natural instinct to just gravitate towards where the ball might actually pop up.
Yeah.
It gets his foot to it. Stonewall penalty. And I'm so happy for him as well, because I remember in the cup, as soon as we won the penalty, everyone was like, right, who's taking it here? For once, it wasn't. Yeah, it's Salah that.
There were so many people going, Thomas, like, take it. Yeah. We reckon he's going to Darwin going to take it. Yeah. And it's like, no, Salah's there. He's on the pitch.
He takes it and he blasts it away, which I like for him as well, because he's had a rough little time with those penalties recently.
Yeah, if you're going to blast it, put it in the inside the frame of the goalposts. That's probably a decent way to start. It was a nailed on pen, wasn't it, Dan? It really was. And I mean, it's great to have that, because I find that whole narrative around Salah diving and stuff is a bit it's just boring. It's overplayed. So when there's one there, there's just no decision to be made other than it's a penalty is great. And it's a close point. Imagine just taking a penalty and scoring it like it's nothing. Good. It takes these things off the agenda. Well, not off our agenda, but off outside of Liverpool people's agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, it was nailed on. There was no real sort of long drawn out VR process or anything like that. It was just penalty. They probably had a quick conversation, I would imagine, because all these things get checked all the time.
But it's Salah. Is there any way we can not give this penalty?
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, there must be a way. There must be a loophole somewhere we can find. But no, and at Anfield as well, that doesn't happen very often. Mm. But yeah, nailed on pen. Salah steps up to take it. And it's interesting, you both said there was conversations in the cop. Obviously, I was here watching the game. And to me, it was always Salah's on the pitch, so Salah takes it. There wasn't even a doubt in my mind. But he took it. And he often whacks him. We obviously whacked him on the Champions League final and stuff like that, so it's not a huge surprise. But having tried to place a couple, I know he misses the one at Bournemouth, he tries to whack it and gets that wrong. So it's interesting that he reverts back to run up and just hit it as hard as I can, and that was the option he went with. And I think even if the keeper had got to that, he might have gone in with it, because he absolutely smashes it. And a little bit of Ben's, you know, comprehensive, emphatically taken. It's nice for him, because there probably was, I don't think he was a million miles removed from being genuine questions about his penalty taking. Yeah. You're probably only one, possibly two misses away from being like, right, now we need to talk about this.
I think it's the one. You know, he's missed too many of late. Yeah. You know, when particularly when you've started, you now got lads. I mean, there's going to be a point to be made, and it won't be after this game, because Szoboszlai's free kicks were awful. but Trent's not on the pitch, so there's a conversation where someone's like taking a few, there'll be a bit of data on what he's doing with stuff, and then there might be, he's more likely to be on more when Trent comes back in the team, because he's had a chance to do it. And Salah's in that situation where now you've got someone on the pitch. I mean, Darwin Nunes tucks us away really well against Lask. You know, he's a guy who had, you know, we don't know whether he's going to be, how he's going to be, because he's such an erratic human being. But you know, he'd have surely made a case to be like, well, you've seen that I'm doing. I am the number nine. After all, it's not many situations where you don't give it to that guy. So yeah, no, good for him. Dan, I'll stick with you on the equaliser. It's a fantastic goal from Jared Bowen. Yeah. Like in terms of the athleticism to get down, mm-hmm. you don't see many diving headers. It's a bit of a lost art form. Chloe and I were having a bit of a discussion about it when we came off the ground, about like kind of like Virgil van Dijk's role. And my immediate reaction was like, oh, come on, Virgil, because he spots the danger.
Yeah.
He gets back in position.
Compensates.
But and it's a bit like he's then almost like, I'm now in. And then Bowen just goes again and he's caused a little flat-footed for it.
No, I think he is. Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. We should say Bowen was a nuisance all afternoon up until that point as well. And where sort of Souček, I'm reticent to say Souček failed with his header because he probably thinks he scored with his when Alisson obviously gets down. And where he kind of failed and Mikel Antonio definitely failed, Jared Bowen, that header's outstanding. It's like, he's no lot loads of pace on it, but to get that low, to stoop and guide it into the corner like that gives Alisson no chances. A really smart header from him. But in terms of Van Dijk, and I suppose bringing Bowen into this equation is interesting as well, because whilst Van Dijk is a little bit passive and he's a little bit on his heels, he's caught a little bit flat-footed, Bowen's the opposite. He's proactive and he's moving towards the ball and he sort of anticipates what could come quicker. Now, by the time Van Dijk probably realises that Bowen is getting ahead of him and is more likely to get to the ball first, if Van Dijk reacts then, there's a good chance he kicks his head clean off his shoulders. So I'm quite glad he didn't do that. But I do have very, very small question marks over Van Dijk in that instance, because as you both said, he gets into position well and he probably thinks, okay, I'm fine here. I don't need to worry anymore. But he does need to be a little bit more anticipating what could happen and sort of the movement in and around him. And the fact that Bowen, you never like to see attackers get in front of your defenders, full stop, do you really? So the fact that that's been allowed to happen doesn't reflect particularly well on Van Dijk. So I don't think he covered himself in loads of glory, let's put it that way.
Come on.
Yeah, it was we're talking right after the game. So people who aren't at the game, they get so many different looks at this. We only get one.
Yeah.
And in that one look, what I've seen is a route one ball up top, four men around Jared Bowen and Antonio, and Jared Bowen wins the header. Mm-hmm. Antonio reacts first and gets the ball when we've got four men there. He's then passed it out to Kufal, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And we've got four and they've got three. And Liverpool should just be defending better.
Yeah.
All over the park for that entire thing. The Bowen header is outrageous. It's a ridiculous header. There's no taking away from that, but the reason how we get in that situation is just due to people not being switched on, not reacting quick enough. The fact that Antonio got to a ball first when we had four men around and was a bit ridiculous, and I was angry because it had 2 minutes to go till half time. You'd felt like even though we'd controlled the game with possession, it wasn't like a calm collective game. They'd had their chances. Liverpool were a little bit slow on the ball. We needed to sharpen up, move it faster.
Yeah.
And it was like, just get us in at half time, 1-0, make a couple of little changes here and there, and get a team talk, get Jürgen to see what he's seeing and give the feedback back and go again. And I thought, like you mentioned there, Virgil van Dijk recognises the danger. He's done the hard part. Yeah, he's got back.
Yeah.
And then what he's done with, and I understand people are saying, yeah, but he's facing the wrong direction to then switch. But turn your body around and jog back that way then. I know you can't because you need to go full pelt, but I just think the positioning of it, it's just Jared Bowen goes again and he's not alert to the fact that Jared Bowen's just going to stand there. Now he's got Virgil van Dijk in front of him.
It's one of them, isn't it? You know, I'm inclined to give, in the heat of the moment, I was a bit annoyed with Virgil being a bit flat-footed.
Yep.
Having watched it back, I'm more inclined to just say sometimes players do brilliant things. Mm. And yeah, I think you're right in all of that, being a bit sharper to, you know, first and second balls around the box. That should be Liverpool tidying that up long before it gets there. But when it comes to that moment, once that ball comes into the box, it's actually just brilliant reactions from Bowen. You know, the way he shifts his weight and gets himself there and gets down. I just think it's a brilliant finish. And sometimes you do, like, players do that, you know what I mean? Yeah. And he's a littler fella, lower centre gravity than Virgil, and he just gets the better of him. So yeah, it's one of them. If we have to point a finger of blame, Van Dijk probably should defend that better. But at the same time, as you say, if he defends it better, he's quite possibly decapitating Jared Bowen in the process.
Right. Salah should have scored, should I say, before that as well. He had a big chance. I say he should have scored. He should do better. He has a big chance on the edge of the box and it could be 2-0 and he fired. And that's play. A really nice football, yeah. And it's the sort of moment that Salah normally laps up, but he gets it slightly wrong. So we should have doubled the lead before we actually conceded.
And look, we won the game, so ultimately it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we're all just nitpicking here, but it's because there is still some question marks over our defensive ability, and maybe that's why we highlighted it in the moment. It doesn't help that it was 3 minutes before half time and the fact that we had enough men back to sort the situation out, and we hadn't in like two different stages beforehand.
The thing that got me, and I referenced it in the post-match content but didn't have the way of visualising it, I'd looked at SofaScore at half time in terms of where they were getting their chances from, and it's obviously I've got the on SofaScore the shot map is still there and you can kind of see it's a cluster, but it's less pronounced at full time because they got some shots from a variety of other places, but at half time all of their shots came from basically between the penalty spot and the edge of the 6 yard box, which is like the perfect place to be if you're going to try and have a shot on, have an effort on goal. And that was a little concerning of keeping out your box, limit them to things. That's where that's Van Dijk and Matip and the goalies' territory. Your centre half should be dealing with everything that comes into there, and that was a little mark of concern.
And it's also, I think someone read a stat to me the other day that was like Liverpool have had the second best defence in the league, and it shocked me. It shocked me because it feels like Liverpool have like been conceding first all the time, and it feels like, well, surely that can't add up because we've conceded in quite a lot of goals here.
It's often just one. It's the fact it's the first is obviously a big blow, but also we are still conceding big chances. Like we're speaking about the first half here, much less so in the second half, but the Antonio one,
if you go back to that, you'll see Antonio's and it just goes off in the other direction.
Yeah, it's terrible. I had like a 50p. But there was the Wolves one the other week. We could have easily been 2-0 down at Wolves if Cooney gets it right. And that's another instance of your talk about there, Paul, in terms of he's in front of the goal. He's between our goalposts. He can only be 6 yards out maximum, so there is an issue in the fact we're letting too many balls come into the box, and not only come into the box, they're finding opponents when they're doing so as well. So either the fullbacks aren't stopping crosses or the centre halves aren't dealing with them when they get there, so there is an issue. And we're winning games right now, so fine, happy days, but we could do with sort of addressing that before it gets out of hand.
Absolutely. Joe Gomez, I thought he had a really good game. There's a number of players, and there always are. So I'm quite laissez-faire and light-hearted when there's players getting certain amounts of criticism, particularly ones who've been at the club for a longer while. There's always been at Liverpool, any Liverpool side ever has always had one, two, three lads who just can't win the fan base over, no matter what. And Gomez, I think, has become one of them for us. I think the way we used him, we just played him more like a right back. You know, there's times when he did drift into that sort of midfield space a little bit, Chloe, but we weren't necessarily giving him the ball there. It was just a functional thing. We weren't going, right, Joe Gomez, you're now our playmaker from a deep lying in, you know, inside right defensive midfield position. He just got to do what he did well. He used his pace on the cover really well. He got up and down the pitch really well. I suppose the attacks, but it was a good Joe Gomez performance. It was probably one of his better ones at right back, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, I thought that right hand side did really well. I think we'll get onto Joel Matip because I could write a book about how good he was the other day. I thought he was phenomenal. As for Joe Gomez, I think the first 15 when everyone was struggling, there's one where like he takes a bad touch or he goes down and he's asking for a foul, but no one else inside that stadium is thinking it's a foul and a chance comes from it. But he grew into the game once we'd settled. Joe Gomez settled as well. And like you mentioned, at sometimes you saw him in the Trent inverted right back position. Sometimes you just saw him out wide, linking up with Mo Salah, linking up with Szoboszlai. And it was a decent performance for him. He got in a couple of really good areas where if the final ball and a cross goal is good enough, he probably gets an assist. He nearly got a goal, but it slithered past him to Diogo Jota.
I would love to see like a highlight compilation of Joe Gomez's near misses of breaking his Liverpool goal scoring duck. That one, and you see it in slow motion, he reacts just a little too late and it's obviously just a little out of his reach, but he just sticks the foot out and he's, the goal's there begging. Yeah, bless him. We were having this before, like, do we think he's ever going to score for Liverpool? If he does, I I'm not sure what a celebration's going to be.
I was thinking that then. I was wondering what a celebration might be. Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
He's defo getting booked for a celebration, no matter what it is.
I think it'll be like the fifth goal and the 5-0 win, and he'll just stop and he'll just high five Virg. I genuinely think we'll wait so long for it, and then it'll be this goal that's just the fifth goal in the game, and him and Virg just.
I'd give it in for it to be a Vincent Kompany. Leicester style
against Liverpool.
Yeah. Just something, a goal that matters. All I ask is that if you're going to go that long, have your goal be one that matters. Curtis disallowed goal, Dan. Mm-hmm. Brilliant pass from Szoboszlai. It was the one thing that we've not really seen actually from Curtis in the last couple of games, which typified how he played the midfield at the back end of last season, was getting into the 18-yard box. He's not far off. In a pre-VAR world, he might even get away with it. But yeah, it's lovely football on the build-up, and the anticipation to get into that position is great.
Yeah, it was, and it's really another really interesting performance from Curtis Jones yesterday, I thought, and it's something I referenced again in our post-match stuff, because it was quite a workman-like performance from Curtis Jones. I've seen stats at half-time that we talk about sort of the amount of duels that he was winning, the ground he was covering, his pass accuracy was really good as well. I think that was in the high 90s, so it was a really solid display from him, and then we got a standing ovation from Anfield when he went off as well, and that was kind of testament to the job he's doing at the moment. And I say that on purpose, really, the job that he's doing, because that's what it feels like to me. Now, with Curtis Jones, we know he's got a lot of sort of skills. He's got a lot in his armoury, but it feels like he's having to sort of almost rein himself in a little bit. And I sort of reference it in the way that I talk about Gini Wijnaldum as well, because when we signed him, he was a lad who got assists and scored goals for Newcastle, and he went away to Holland and he got assists and scored goals. When he came to Liverpool, he just did a job very well, but he just did a job. And it feels like Jones is doing something very similar at the minute, because we know he can score, we know he likes to sort of try his luck from range and shimmy past players and be that creative and make things happen, and you get to see glimpses of it. But because he's got Szoboszlai and McAllister and Diaz and Nunes and Salah etc. around him, he just thinks it or he's told it, I don't need to be the flashy lad to make, because I always talk about his academy days and the fact that he was the one, get me the ball and I'll show you what I can do, and I'll be the one to take the game. He's not doing that anymore, which is fine, and it's even more fine because he can do it. And if he's ever called upon to do it, it's another lad on the pitch who's got stuff in his locker to make things happen, and that's so exciting. But I'm really impressed with Curtis Jones. I think he's found a little niche for himself in this side, and he's fulfilling his duties brilliantly at the minute.
Absolutely, he ticks a lot of boxes. You know, he doesn't lose possession of the football, and the case can still be made there's one or two times where he holds on a bit, but actually I thought he really typified what I enjoyed most about Liverpool's performance, Chloe, because there's a bit in the second half when it gets a bit, the game threatens to get a bit naughty, you know, it gets feisty, it gets heated, there's a couple of like, not necessarily bad tackles thrown in, but you can sense that there's a tipping point to it. And I think Liverpool last year might have been a bit meek, but Curtis Jones was kind of at the centre of things. He was refusing to be bullied, I think, is what, and then he all of a sudden, you know, he's getting backed up. Szoboszlai's going like, well, I'm not having this. Szoboszlai's tearing 30, 40 yards down the pitch to go and go shoulder to shoulder with someone just to prove a point that he can get the ball back off them. Curtis is holding on to things and getting stuck in. You've got obviously Darwin Nunes lives for it, Diaz lives for it, and even like McAllister, who's kind of, we're thinking of him as this, like, is he quite the right fit for the DM? You know, he's this cultured, he's this silk glove of a midfielder. But they're all battlers, and it's the most Jürgen Klopp sort of aspect of a Liverpool team. It's the thing that we adore watching as Liverpool players, and that's for, you know, watching of our Liverpool players. I was made up to see that, because again, Curtis, it's about feeling like you deserve to be on the pitch and feeling like you've got something to lose, and I just thought he handled it brilliantly.
Yeah, I think his performances are underrated because, like you mentioned there, I think he's being told that you're no longer that flashy player. We need you to get stuck in. We need you to retain the ball. You know, Szoboszlai on the ball is the one who's going to unlock things. Yeah. McAllister too. And I think Curtis Jones is needed there for the balance. I really do. And I think that's why maybe we've reined him in a little bit. It's great to see that he can still make that run. You know, he was a left winger, so he's very versatile, but he's also got the attacking attacking ability. He knows where he needs to be. He knows the runs he needs to make, the spaces he needs to occupy. The finish is lovely as well. I mean, it was an unbelievable ball to him. It's great to see that. But also what I loved from him the other day was his pressing. The way he pressed the life of a goalkeeper. If it didn't go from the left back, he'd then press the goalkeeper. He'd then press the right centre back. He'd then press the right back. And then you just felt the crowd like getting up and up and up for it. Yeah. And like you mentioned there was some not great tackles. They weren't horrific, but it was also some of the referee decisions that just weren't going our way.
Yeah.
And the crowd were getting angry. The crowd were getting up. And the Reds then just went into a different gear and said, you know what? We'll just take the ball and we'll control the game even more. And we went into a different gear. And it was very much in that first half, I felt like we weren't winning as many battles. We weren't strong enough all the time. But in the second half, our midfield dominated. We weren't allowed to do that as much in the first half, especially with the first 15. But in the second half, we dominated the midfield, and that was key to winning the game.
Yeah, no, I absolutely couldn't agree more on that. Just linking it in then with one of the players that we mentioned, again, the tirelessness, the way they get stuck in. What?
Are you going to say Szoboszlai?
Oh, I wasn't. You know I don't talk about Szoboszlai in first half of podcast.
Alexis.
No.
Tireless. Darwin Nunes, Oliver Stiers.
Yeah, I was going to do Darwin Nunes. But you're right. That's quite funny. Those tireless.
Could have talked about
any single one of those guys.
We are going to talk about Szobo at some point, though, right? We can't possibly.
No, not on the agenda.
Going home.
Well, I'm going to make it about myself and Szoboszlai at some point.
We can talk about Szoboszlai.
Because he's unreal.
We'll do it after this. Darwin Nunes, Dan, he has that miss, the one that he toes past the post.
Yeah, I remember it.
And I think if he does that at this stage of last season, I think his head goes. Mm-hmm. But instead, it was more like a number nine should be another one's going to come and I'm going to stick the next one away. And ultimately, the goal that he does score is an infinitely more difficult finish and chance than the one that he actually misses a few minutes earlier.
Isn't that just Darwin in a nutshell, though, quite frankly? He misses the one that he absolutely should score and then pulls off the outrageous one over his shoulder where he just deftly flicks it past the keeper. It's just him summed up, basically, in the space of two chances. Yeah, I mean, I to sort of riff off what Chloe was saying earlier, I think Darwin's all-round play has improved a lot. Certainly in recent weeks, I think his hold-up play, sort of that old-fashioned number nine stuff that he's doing it really, really well. And it's clear to see that there have been improvements in him as a footballer since he arrived at Liverpool, because I think the times last year it was almost as if it's like when Cody Gakpo comes in, he kind of shines a brighter light on this, because if Darwin doesn't score in games, what is he bringing to the party?
Essentially.
Last season,
yeah.
Whereas now in recent times he gets his goals, but also he's offering all this other stuff as well, and that's massively important.
I was talking to my dad about it yesterday, and he was saying it was just great traditional number nine play from him. You know, he's getting up and he's not just like flicking things on or you know, it's not quite, he's controlled heading it to people to bring people into play. He's like chesting it into people's path. It was one of those things, and I came away from it and all I could think of, I've watched a couple of bits of Man City games recently, and I know I'm not going to bring up the tiresome Haaland, Darwin Nunes comparisons, but it's more like as a number nine, Erling Haaland misses all kinds of shit, and he looks really stupid when he does because he's massive and he's just an awkward looking human being. But he's never asked, because he knows when one really comes to him, he's just going to bury it. And I'm starting to feel like, I feel like that way about Nunes, but actually Nunes feels that way about Nunes as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think confidence is a major, major factor in what we're talking about here. I think he's got a few goals under his belt already this season, and he is just living off that. And that yesterday was living proof of that, because like you say, he misses the one, but it doesn't seem to get to him. Whereas I think previous incarnations of Nunes, you see a different man for the next 10, 15 minutes. I mean, fortunately, you don't have to wait that long for the next big chance, because it is a matter of minutes later. But what was so frustrating about the first one, obviously the score is 1-1 at the time and the game's on a knife edge, and you don't want that to be the moment that defines his performance.
Yeah,
you know, because I think he's already seen Jota and Gakpo warming up, he's probably thinking, oh god, I need to do something big here, and then he misses that, you might be thinking, oh no, my time's coming. And that wouldn't have been fair, because performance deserved better than that.
Yeah,
but that build build-up for what could have been that Darwin goal was exceptional. Like, the patience and the precision that there was. And then we find the space, and Darwin's movement's really good. And then, obviously, he misses at the crucial time. But the goal itself, I mean, the pass from McAllister. Like, I was really impressed with McAllister generally yesterday, because I've been, I don't want to say critical, but I've been questioning him as a six, because I don't know if his defensive instincts are there necessarily. But what he is good at and what we signed him for is that type of stuff, because that pass is just phenomenal. And the skill of Núñez.
Thiago does those passes, and you know, like, you pick, like, Barcelona midfielders, you know, in pomp of Barcelona perform passes like that. No, I agree. It's a beautiful, goal. And it was just, again, Chloe, it's that, the vibe on the cop thing of, like, because it's there, it's laid out in front of you. The one he stabs past the post is like, I'm in line with that. So you're like, oh Christ, mate, that's a thing, isn't it? But you know, he keeps going, he keeps smiling, and yeah, the finish is just it's outrageously good. That's just a number nine, absolutely loving life in you know, and absolutely flying in the role.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous finish, to be perfectly honest. The way he's, you know, timed his run, first of all, the ball's brilliant, but when he did it, I still didn't, I was like, it felt like it hung in the air for ages to me, and he stabs it past the goalkeeper so well. But the thing I loved about Darwin Núñez's performance was his work rate was unbelievable. He gets, you know, he makes a couple of fouls in the first half by just wanting to run all the way back and help press. If someone beat them or they won the ball back, Darwin Núñez was tracking him from his striker position. Yeah. And it happened in the second half when you felt anxious inside the stadium, or you felt like, oh, he's just missed a chance. We really need a goal here. He was the one every time Liverpool lost the ball and we could potentially be countered. He was sprinting back with their players and he was trying, and what he was doing was, it meant that we had players who could double up, and then even though he may not have won it, he's put the player under pressure that someone else can come and get the ball. I loved the fact that I was watching him, and I've not seen this from Darwin Núñez. He'd make one run, he'd not get picked out, so he'd get back inside, he'd make another, and then he'd make another, and then he'd make another, and it was non-stop. The amount of running out of him, and it caused space everywhere else in the middle of the park. Yep. Because like we just mentioned with Bowen then for his goal, he initially makes a run to the back post and then cuts across Virgil. Well, what Darwin Núñez was doing, he was running off the shoulder, then he'd go in front of the man and run off in that way, and he'd constantly do it. He deserved the goal. I thought he was boss. I thought he'd been boss the last couple of weeks. And those two goals from the Newcastle game, I think if he would have just scored them and we'd have won, you know, 3-4-1, I don't think he'd be playing like he is right now. I think he's improved massively, but I think the way in which he came on and grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck, got the goal that got us back into it, and all of us were like, oh my god, have we got a point here? Yeah. But instead he dispatches two incredible goals in that game and gets us the 3 points against the Champions League side. It's like, that the confidence that must have gave him has led him to believe that he can do what he's doing now. And he is my number nine at this moment. It is his shirt, and the others have to fight for it.
I totally agree on this, and I'm just getting the numbers up so far. Combined goal contributions so far this season in seven games into the season, Mo Salah's got 8 and Darwin Núñez has got 6. Salah's got 4 goals and 4 assists, but Darwin Núñez has got 4 goals and 2 assists.
Hasn't
and
he's played actually less. Yeah,
and he's done it. Salah's played 537 minutes. Mm-hmm. Núñez only played 313. So what are you talking? 224 minutes less than Salah. And he's got the same amount of goals as him. Now, you know, our basic understanding of football for any decade prior to the last one is, well, he's number nine, he should be scoring more goals than the winger. But this is Mohamed Salah, who scores 30 goals a season. And our number nine never outscores Mo Salah and never has done. These are all, Dan, very, very encouraging things. It's, you start to see what we bought. And I remember saying last summer, I did feel like Haaland was best in class. Mm-hmm. And Núñez was full of potential, but he was maybe a season undercooked. And then we were all kind of keen in the summer. Everyone was revisiting his first and second seasons and Benfica and what have you. It is early doors, but I agree with Chloe totally. I'm not sure how Gakpo gets ahead of him at the moment. Because look, if you're coming in the team and you're scoring goals and getting assists, well, you wouldn't take that person out of the team.
No, you can't at the minute, no. And we all know how much of a fan of Cody Gakpo I am, but I think at the minute it absolutely has to be Darwin Nunez's shirt. And it's not just his goal involvements that he referenced. That's obviously a huge part of what he's doing, but it's all around play at the minute. Chloe sort of references his work rate, his endeavour. I've never questioned his desire to work hard for the team. That's never been an issue. It's sometimes just been his understanding of how he should work for the team. Yep. But he looks like he's got that at the minute. Yeah. So it's a no-brainer right now. He has to stay in the side. And I think he's the full package in terms of what you want your number nine to be. I've got no question about that whatsoever. And we've seen that firsthand at Anfield when he played for Benfica, because that was one of the greatest number nine performances I've seen for a long time at Anfield. He was just, no one could get near him that night. Virgil van Dijk couldn't deal with him. Konate couldn't live him on the other side. He was just a nightmare. Really, really difficult to sort of pin down at any point. And we're seeing that now. And we're seeing it sort of the advanced version of that as well, because he's a little bit older, he's more mature, he's worked under Jurgen Klopp, he's working with some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
So he could be the full package. Now, he's still a little bit rough around the edges. We've seen that with that miss yesterday, and he can have his moments whereby you think, come on, Darwin. He still needs that little bit of refining. But if last year, if we were sort of like 60% of the way there with him, let's put it like that, now I think we're more like 80 to 85% of the way there. Yeah. With him. Still not quite done, mm-hmm. but it's a marked improvement, and it's really, really exciting to see, because as a footballer, as a specimen, we always talk about Haaland being that sort of, if you build a striker, Darwin Nunez isn't far removed from that. He's rapid, he's 6 foot plus, he's good in the air, he gets about, he's got the lot. He just needs to calm down a little bit and refine it.
I also think it helps with the players that we've also brought in who he's taken a liking to. I mean, Luis Diaz is his best mate.
Yeah.
You've got Alexis McAllister. Surely everyone's seen the video of him just with his arms around both of them at full time. He's obviously got the Brazilian boys there as well. There is a good group of lads there who, and we all talk about how he struggled first with the language. Well, now he's got all these people who are older than him, who've played under Klopp a little bit longer, or like Alexis McAllister, played in the Premier League longer, who can help him out and help him relay those messages. So it's also the group around him, because he just looks like he's loving life at the minute, and so does Liverpool as a package.
Absolutely. And, you know, we spoke about Salah and the evolution of Salah on the podcast last week. It's a bit getting shades of their relationship is a bit like the Undertaker coming toward the end of his career and doing a job for the next great, you know, star on the way up. You know, you make that other guy look good. And Darwin's desperate to make Salah look good as well. He's desperate to give him the ball just as much. And yeah, it's again, it's early doors in the season, but it's not too much more you can ask for. And it feels like more will come. You know, he's only going to get all those things that he does. He's going to get better. He's still young, he's still raw those edges, he'll get sanded off. And he took it, and all the lads did, to go back to that feistiness, they took it personally. Mm. I think that you know, when West Ham did win a physical battle, they were like, well, no. And what Robertson was referring to last year when it was going shit, about how like you meant to help your mate out. That's what I saw from that. You know, it looked like a tight-knit group of players who were like, I'm going to go and fight for you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go, you know, he's just gone and had to go with my mate. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And Darwin is running back like 40, 50 yeah. yards to go and stop someone, because he's just like, no, I'm not having that. I'm not having someone go past my Alexis McAllister there. I'm going to go and get revenge. And there was a comment earlier, actually, from Neverman is here, and he was talking about Curtis with him, and he said, after the Suchek tackle, Jones played with controlled anger. And I totally agree with that on the Curtis front, but I thought it was true of all of Liverpool's play. It could have bubbled over, it could have gone into being like a scrap or a fist fight or whatever, but actually it was channeled in the right way. It was channeled in the way that we've come to expect the Jurgen Klopp side should look like. Go on, Dominic Szoboszlai.
Love him. I genuinely think we might have a world beater. I think he is a gem. I don't have the words, because he's like an animal. I have never seen anyone with more energy. I thought Mo Salah was the fittest that ever came in terms of work rate and how 90 minutes into a game, he's still trying for his goal. Dominic Szoboszlai is running 30, 40 yards in the 95th minute to press someone
yeah.
when they've got a ball in the corner and they're not going anywhere. And it's just, he takes the game upon his shoulders. He's like, I'm the one who's going to... I'm not having this, lads. You aren't taking the piss out of me and my team. He's got everything. He's got the passing range is ridiculous. The assist that he should have had Curtis being onside, ridiculous. His work rate is outrageous. The skill, the way he strides with the ball and it feels like in 5 seconds he's ran the pitch because his legs are just so long that he takes up so much ground.
Yeah.
His work rate back and his leadership. He was on the pitch and like something went wrong and Virgil clapped him for his attempt and he started clapping everyone else for their attempts in and around him for the runs. He's just, I don't have words for how good he is. And look, the midfield that we had that won the Premier League under Klopp, I sat there and said, this is possibly the greatest Liverpool side I will ever see. And, you know, the likes of that had a midfield of Gini Wijnaldum, Jordan Henderson and Fabinho. Well, I've got McAllister, I've potentially got Gravenberch, I've got Curtis Jones, and I've got Szoboszlai. And Szoboszlai, all I keep seeing is Gerrard, and I miss the best parts of Gerrard because sadly he started his career when I was not here, or at least when I was a child.
Yeah.
And if I get to see anything like that in Dominic Szoboszlai, it's like someone has gone into a lab and said, I want the best midfielder to play football. What does that look like? He's this foot tall. He's huge. He's a unit. He's got long legs, small feet. I just don't get it. I just do not get it.
Yeah, it should make him unstable. You know what I mean? He should tip over more. Yeah. But we were discussing this. In fact, it was a point that Dave, who's one of the lads who regularly speaks to us at post-match, has done plenty of post-match content with us over the years, he was like, he said to me, I can't wrap my head around the fact that he's only a year older than Fabio Carvalho. So some people are just genetic freaks. They're just they're born with certain advantages, you know, in that way. And that's just the difference, Danny. You buy complete packages. It costs money. Look, £60 million effectively up front is a huge chunk of money to throw down on a footballer to go and do the release clause. But if you're going to do it on that. Do it on a lad who's 6'2", or 6', whatever, who's lightning quick, who's good with both feet, good in tight spaces. He's got leadership qualities, so he's a big character as well. And he's got an absolute bottomless pit of fuel in his tank as well. You have to pay big money for them because they are he's potentially the absolute complete package of a footballer.
Oh yeah, he's a real deal. There's no two ways about that. I think we fought it for a little while now already this season, but I think yesterday what we witnessed was just further proof of that, quite frankly. He's worth every single penny we paid, even though it was a lot of money up front, as you say, large outlays, worth every single penny. He is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. He conducts himself. You reference his age there. He doesn't conduct himself like a 22-year-old by any stretch of imagination. He goes about the pitch like he's 26, 27, 28.
He's 22.
Dominic Szoboszlai.
Wow.
He's a freak. Like, I think he's absolutely incredible. And what it is for me, more than anything, Chloe references his leadership there, and she's right to do so. But there's a moment in the game whereby I think he wins a tackle and gets us back on the front foot, and it's a little bit frantic at the time. The game's just starting to boil over, as we've already spoken about. And Szoboszlai just someone goes, calm down. He gives it the hand. Just everyone just chill out. It's like, you're quite new here, lad.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're the captain of Hungary, and you know you're a very good player, but for you to be demonstrating those levels of leadership, it's just an absolute joy to watch, quite frankly. But what it is, I referenced this yesterday with Evel, so forgive me for anyone else who's listening for the second time. It's on YouTube as well, but we knew a little bit about his quality. I spoke to a lot of different people and said how good he is, how technically proficient he was. Said he'll score goals from range, he'll do the outrageous, you'll be off your seats watching him, you'll get all that stuff. But nobody ever really made reference to the fact he runs his absolute socks off and his work rate is just through the roof. Yeah. So it's like he's got to Liverpool and he's taken the weight of the shirt and the number 8 and the fact he's working under Klopp and he's gone, well, I need to go up here.
Yep.
Like, I've not made it here. This is the start of me. Watch what I'll do now. And he's just taken his own game up and up and up and up. So I maintain, we've seen one goal from him, which was outstanding, by the way, like absolutely outstanding. But we haven't even seen, this is just the start of this. There's so, so much more to come. Because you mentioned his free kicks in a sort of a tongue-in-cheek way before.
Yeah.
He scores worldly free kicks.
Yeah.
He scores worldly goals. He gets worldly assists. He does outrageous things. And we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, everyone around me on the cop has a couple of times where he's just shifting his body weight outside the box and go on.
Exactly.
That moment hasn't quite arrived for him yet where it hasn't quite... Well, he scores the left footed one the other week, but like he hasn't quite had that clean strike on goals. But he's actually being sensible in that. He's not just... He's not Phil Coutinho in it of like, I've got my thing, I know I can score from here. We all had that lad in five-a-side who scored that one in a million. super narrow angle powered shot that doesn't go in ever. But every now and again, you hit them enough, they do, you know, you'll beat a goalkeeper in the near post. So I was like, knows he's got that in his locker, but he's not going to compromise the attack, the build up play when it's not there. But you're right, at some point, he's going to be cool and confident enough to be like, okay, is this all good? You know, I've got cover, and if this should go wrong, right, Sam, I'm going to blame that. He's played more minutes than anyone for Liverpool so far this season.
Every minute in the league, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got 6.390 out of his 7 matches he appeared in, 570 minutes, which is 30 more than Andy Robertson and 30 more than Alisson because of the substitute appearance in the Europa League this week. And as you say, it's not like... I looked at Diaz yesterday and I was a little, I thought it was probably one of his weakest games for us, particularly not counting those getting back to full sharpness at the end of last season. That he looked a little, he battled well enough, but he looked a little, looked a little off. Was Szoboszlai still legging people in the 95th minute and stuff?
It's the fact that people on the cop are literally still turning to you and going, how's he still doing this? Like, how's he still going? Yeah. Like, no one can actually believe what he's doing because it's 95 minutes. You've probably ran the most already and you're still pressing someone. But I also, you mentioned there, like, his shot. I think he had a shot maybe against, like, Bournemouth maybe or Aston Villa. It leads to a goal. I think it was at the Kop end.
The Jota goal, maybe, was it? The keeper palms it out and Jota follows it in, yes. I think, yeah.
The thing about Szoboszlai is that you look at him and it just seems so easy to him. Like, it just, at no stage do you think he's sweating or he's worried about anything. And he's got authority. He's just stepped into the team and he's turning around and demanding that everyone else plays at his level. I don't have enough words to say about how good he is.
We had a song in like 2008, around that time, of like the best midfield in the world.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, you had, obviously, Steven Gerrard. So you had, like, Gerrard was all energy and dynamism and front foot and shooting from distance and raking passes. You know, captain, fantastic. And obviously, as meant literally the captain. You know, Xabi Alonso, who was all silk and style and control and moving the ball and keeping the tempo going. Great use of the ball in small spaces. You had Mascherano, who was a terrier, was just like never ran out of energy, would run all game long through brick walls for you and get in people's faces and bother them. And you had, like, Mo Sissoko, who again, utterly tireless, long leg, gangly, good in the air, would run and win the ball back in any given situation. Szoboszlai might be the best midfield in the world. He literally might be. Might deserve that song just for himself because he is. There's nothing he doesn't seem to have in his game. You know, he's a right winger, and then, you know, we're playing him in like an attacking midfield slot, doing a bit of 10 stuff, but then we've played him in a double pivot as well, and he's been like this controlling, calming influence on the football match. He's brilliant. There you go. We got you.
Thank you.
Szoboszlai chatting. The only other midfielder I thought who actually ran him close for the man of the match was Lucas Paqueta. I just want to talk about him.
Absolutely took the piss.
I really like Lucas Paqueta. I really, really do. He's a narc. Yeah. He's a bellend. I'm a bit like, I'm glad he didn't go to City. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's probably because he's going to end up banned for gambling offences or whatever, but... he was the one. I think, you know, we'll talk about Michel Antonio next. We mentioned Jared Bowen already, who caused this issue, because I think he's a good player too. But Lucas Paqueta he's too good for West Ham. He should be playing for a Man City. He should be playing for us. I don't think he'll ever play for us now because I think we're the players we bought. But he would. He's well better than Mateus Nunes. I'd rather Man City have Nunes than have Paqueta because he's great.
Well, they'd have offered that as well, wouldn't they, City? Because he was the first choice.
Yes.
And when, obviously, the betting stuff came out, that ended City's interest in him and he went straight to Nunes and obviously got that deal done. But yeah, he was phenomenal yesterday.
He got clapped off the pitch at Anfield, Lucas Paqueta, and that's...
I thought that was just because Danny Ings was replacing him.
Good point, yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of, just...
Admiration
for that performance, because he was the
one. And rightly so. He was brilliant.
He was brilliant.
And we're not talking about... Last year, there were times whereby midfielders could have good games against us, but our midfield was in tatters at times. So it's like, was he good or were we just terrible? But now we're talking about, we've all waxed lyrical about all of our midfielders' performance yesterday, yet still, Paqueta has a very, very good game. That just goes to show how impressive he was. But you're right. I think, you know, with all due respect to West Ham and the fact that they are champions of Europe, of course, we mustn't forget that. He was brilliant yesterday, but I do think he's a bit too good for them. Yeah. And if he doesn't get banned, I mean, there's a move coming quite soon.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right. I'm going to read a quote to you guys. I'm going to read it to everyone at home.
Oh, I know what it is.
You know what? I think we're going to finish higher than Liverpool this season.
Yeah.
I'm putting it out there. I watched the game, Wolves versus Liverpool, because it was before our game and Wolves could have run away with it. They had quite a few opportunities. We've got them this weekend and it's a six-pointer. We've got them. Not my words. Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club, audience watching and listening at home. The words of Mikel Antonio ahead of Liverpool's 3-1 win over West Ham United.
Exquisite.
Brilliant, Chloe.
He also said he backed himself against our defence and then got pocketed by Joel Matip for entire game.
Well, more importantly, I mean, like, Virgil van Dijk totally and utterly dominated him from the whole football match. I think you've spoken a lot about Matip's performance. I thought Matip was all right, if I'm honest. I thought Matip was very much at the full extent of what he still has as a footballer to keep Mikel Antonio quiet. Virgil van Dijk made it a point of beating him. He actively made a point of stepping up and winning headers just for a laugh and making it look painfully easy against him. I described him in my post-match as the answer to the question of what happens if you strap a jet engine to a bin lorry. And you know, he's a big, strong, messy handful. Dan, you know, he made a huge rod for his back there and he did not back it up in any way, shape or form.
No, they never learn, did they? Like, you know, they just never, ever learn, these people. I mean, Clinton Morrison, you probably remember that years ago, he had a right go at Michael Owen and something, a miss he did, and then went on to miss a big chance himself at Anfield. So, yeah, they don't learn, these strikers, as simple as that. But, yeah, I mean, why even bother? Why is he even speaking on a podcast in the build-up to a game about us? I don't understand the world we're living in, to be honest with you. But yeah, madness. I think Chloe and yourself are right. I don't think he had a sniff, really. We kept him at bay pretty much throughout. And I'm quite impressively so, really, because I actually think he's a nuisance, really, isn't he? Yeah. He can be very hard work, Mikel Antonio, because he runs forever. He's big, he's strong, he's quick. And yeah, he can make life difficult for you, but he didn't on this occasion because we just didn't let him at all. Joel Matip, I thought Joel Matip was really good.
I thought Joel Matip was incredible.
I think he's really good.
Genuine. I understand what you mean with Verge. I think at first he might have tried Verge and when he realised he wasn't getting any luck at all, he was like, no, yeah, actually I'm going to go on Joel Matip's side.
Yeah.
Joel Matip just bullied him and bullied him and bullied him and bullied him over and over and over again. And I think, I didn't include it in my vlog, but there was a specific part where he hit the deck once again, and to sum up his performance, I think I turned around and said, why the F are you on the floor again, lad? He spent more time on the floor than he did with the ball at his feet. He was literally, every time he just got bullied and just fell to the floor and was asking for things. And it's, why would you do it? I understand you saying you back yourself and stuff, but think it in your head. Don't come out and put a target on your back. Because every time you miss, every time you F up, every time you take a bad touch, that entire crowd is going to be on your back. And it happened from moment one when he messed up. That header, which should just be nestling into the bottom corner, a very easy chance. It's a free header and he puts it so far wide that if you had another goal next to Alisson's goal, it still probably would have hit the post. That happened so early on in the game and he just let the crowd then get on his back for it. I don't know why you'd ever do that. I'm fine with you backing yourself. I'm fine with you thinking you have a chance. I actually like that, but think it all in your head. And then once it's happened, then maybe you can turn around and said, well, I really thought. That's fine. Don't say it beforehand. Put more pressure on yourself and more pressure on your team.
I'd not seen the quotes ahead of the game. But it was the people around me in the ground, like, and the reaction to him, just laughing at him, and every time Matip or Van Dijk came out ahead of him, it was like it gave the crowd a lift, and I was a bit like, it's Mikel Antonio, what are we doing? You know, but
and like, treatment,
well, we know he's a handful, and we know we've seen him cause Man City problems, so he's a good target man centre forward, right? He does score goals, does cause problems. He is key to how they play. But yeah, you're right. Why have you done that? You idiot. It was changing room wall kind of stuff, wasn't it? Pin it to the mirror, you know, and give the team a little bit of extra fire. Just mad. I mean, I'm just going to read through some of his stats. He played 74 minutes. He has expected goals 0.12. Now, bear in mind, he misses an absolute sitter of a header, complete sitter of a header.
And doesn't just miss it, he misses it big style as well.
Yeah. Dribble attempts for two successful.
Okay.
Just 24 touches of the ball in the whole game. Only 5 of 8 accurate passes.
He only made eight passes.
Cross, zero accurate. Ground duels, he won 4 of his 10 ground duels. He won 0 of his 6 aerial duels.
Yeah.
0 of 6.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I hope they talk about that this week on his pod. Callum Wilson, if you are ever listening to this, Callum Wilson, bring up those stats on that podcast because that needs discussing. Especially after the back of their 8-0 win, bring that up, please. That'd be lovely.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. I love stuff like that. I live for it because genuinely, I think this happens a lot. I think there's a lot of people, and football is just mad because how many footballers end up as pundits, and this is the pathway they follow. They look at a league table, but don't look at the context behind it. And I think this is now the second season, the second season after Liverpool have had a bad season, where people have gone, Liverpool had a bad season, that means Liverpool must be shit.
Yeah.
And bear in mind that one of them seasons, Liverpool finished third. People thought, oh, Liverpool was shit, you know, because it was real Ferdinand coming out of bad season, like Man United finished second. Oh, well, they're better than Liverpool. Look how many points they finished ahead of Liverpool. It's like, yeah, mate, but Liverpool literally had no centre halves all season and managed to finish a place behind it in the league.
It's too sensible, though, isn't it?
No, I know. but the point is that I don't think some people do it to be antagonistic, but a lot of people looked at Liverpool finishing fifth and went, Liverpool are done, Liverpool are finished. And sadly, a lot of people in our own fan base seem to feel that as well. And I get it, there's fears that they might be that, but to unequivocally be like, and publicly be like, nah, Liverpool are done. What are you doing saying that Liverpool are done? It's madness, absolute madness. And Michel Antonio basically summed up a ton of people online and how they're looking at Liverpool. Long may it continue, because let the people think that Liverpool are done, because I think it actually helps. Because I think Moyes... I think we're going to see clubs continue to think they can get change out of Liverpool by throwing the kitchen sink at us, and I think we're going to find increasingly Liverpool just start absolutely smashing teams left, right, and centre. So thank you so much, Michel Antonio, you idiot. Right, we're going to take a break. After which we are going to be looking a little bit back on the last game and talking about a couple of the issues that still perhaps face Liverpool despite a genuinely brilliant start to the season. Wrap your ears and eyes around this stuff, and then we will return.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, welcome back. It is the Redmen Originals podcast. If you want to see the Redmen Originals five-a-side special, it is out now on redmenplus.com. A fun afternoon was had by everyone who played against us. and just because Chloe asked me to say publicly, Chloe played the Buskets role for us, neat and tidy, keeping it moving. Yeah. I think you know what, Chloe? I think you need to be more aggressive in your play. You talk an aggressive game, but I wanted to see you beating more people, if I'm being honest.
I'm so sorry. The centre back decided to shoot from 30 yards out and had the power of Sutton that could knock me out.
The
straight.
Power of Thor throwing his fucking
literally
hammer around the world.
Every time one of their centre backs decided to shoot, I was not.
No,
standing.
And that's
that.
That's fine, but I think you can translate your inner narc into just kicking more ankles.
I like doing it to the referee instead.
Yeah,
that's how I like abusing the referee instead. Apparently,
brilliant. Yeah. In the modern Premier League game, you'd have accumulated about 4 red cards. Yeah. That's fine. But really, really good stuff. Do go and check it out. A bit different from what we've done previously. My feet have only just recovered.
Are you good
that.
Now, though? Yeah, you're good.
I spent 2 days walking around Vienna and Linz and with a lot of bandaging and whatever to get me through, but somehow I've managed to push through and
the
survive.
The Wolves steward had me off, really. Feet were in bits, weren't it? And it was like 2 days later, he sent me to the wrong side of the ground and made me do a full 2 laps of the stadium.
There was a point when I woke up on the Thursday morning and had to squeeze pus out of one of my toes, but based on it.
Wowza.
Yeah. That was bad. I was in a bad way.
We saw LeBaker.
I don't think this is this kind of shit.
I was in a bad way. Anyway, speaking of Lask, not only were the soles of my feet rebirthed my love of European football. Paul Gorst actually wrote an article about this, but it totally summed up my general feelings of it. I know you guys weren't there for it, but I don't know what the general perception of it was, because it's hard, because Europa League, you laugh at the Europa League and you laugh at the League Cup and you laugh at the FA Cup when it doesn't go your way. Liverpool are in it, and I said this when we knew it was confirmed we were going to be playing in it. It's got to be seen as an opportunity, and it can be seen as a cold opportunity of like, well, it's just game time, so these guys can play, these lads can play these minutes. But I just thought it was great. There's just something about going somewhere we've not been before, you know, new stadia, new teams, their fans, you know, going into an environment where it was so noisy from the first minute to the last. They were absolutely behind the team. Different level channels, a challenge, facing up against the worries of complacency and everything. I don't know what your feeling was on the last game, but I know we went behind and it was a little hairy for a bit, but I just enjoyed the whole experience.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. Yeah, I think just on the Europa League more generally, I'm made up that we're in it, to be honest with you. I think we've been spoilt in recent years, for want of a better expression, because I've grown up on us, you know, being in the Europa League and that being just a thing that happens. Like, recent years, as Jurgen Klopp's taken us back to heights I could have only dreamt of growing up, to be honest with you. So other than 2005 being very much the exception to that, of course. But yeah, I'm made up, and obviously the final being in Dublin is a little sweetener to that as well. But generally speaking, if we're on the game, it's a difficult one, this, because we're all expecting, me, Chloe and Chris obviously did the build-up and indeed the watch-along, we're all expecting just to sort of brush these aside with sort of minimal fuss. But it's not going to be that easy, I don't think, because we're playing against teams who, we've seen it in the reaction from Union, this is like their opportunity, this is their moment, this is their night, they're welcoming six-time European champions. And that sounds a little bit arrogant, but that's the reality of it as well. These players are going to run through brick walls for 90 minutes just to get close to some of our lads, and that's the way it's going to be, regardless of what team we put out there. So I think we are, and we should brace ourselves for sterner tests than we might have expected, certainly when we're going to make the sort of level and the quantity of changes that we made on Thursday. But I see it as a massive opportunity for different lads and to get some minutes in, and we can use it to our advantage as well. I think we did that quite well the other night, because we got some important minutes back into some players and we rested other lads. So it can be a real plus for us this season that the Champions League doesn't necessarily afford you that luxury. Yeah. But yeah, I think overall on the performance, yet another one sort of in the face of adversity going 1-0 down. We were pretty much in control, but is another example of the 20 minutes a side coming out, and albeit only Lask in inverted commas, they came at us and they gave us a scare, and the goal, like whatever we say about them, but that goal is high, high class.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned the complacency thing before, Chloe. This is it. You know, I've seen Liverpool sides go to Mansfield Town and need a Luis Suarez handball. You know, like dodgy moments to get us across the line in football games. I've seen Gerrard die for penalties against like Yeovil Town to, you know, to get us across the line in these games, because that's the point. It's the game of the lives for these, and they've got their own fans behind them. We've got an expectation. This notion of we're just going to walk in and wipe the floor with them, ultimately they should be, and it shouldn't be. We shouldn't be excusing Liverpool not winning the games. But also this idea of, again, I think it creeps into the fan base, but what Dan's saying as well, a bit like Liverpool, you know, this is what being a football fan is. Your club isn't always at the absolute top, so you've got to enjoy what it comes, and there's got to be some sort of learning experience. And while we've got a good manager like Klopp and good players that we have, then there will always be benefits to playing in these kind of games.
Yeah, I think also from the lineup, I think we were all overexcited because we'd saw a group of players who, you know, bend out the legs of him. I think we were all screaming out for him to start. Gravenberch, we didn't know what he was about yet. You want to know what Wataru Endo's about. Your Canate's obviously come back in for it.
So do you know what Wataru Endo's about? I'm no clearer, by the way.
But Jettis in the right back role is the one, by the way. Yeah. In terms of experimental, he was the one.
Harvey Elliott, obviously, on that side as well. So there was a lot of like question marks, but it was all excitement. And I think we were all very much like, well, these lads, A, half of them need to prove a point. B, they all want to just do well because they're trying to show themselves off. So like, you expected us to start better than we did. And yeah, look, we probably did overestimate Lask. I think a lot of us were all joking as well when we did it. But we thought, yeah, why not? But it is a case of this is the biggest game in half of those, well, all of those players' lives.
And it was matched up by the amount of comments I had in the, you know, on my channel in the vlog, of like people saying like, thanks for coming to Lidl, loving the positivity. And people were saying like, it's great to see Mohamed Salah play football in our town. You know what I mean? Which is, when you forget it, because you're so used to like, there's an arrogant versus arrogance, you know, so when European superpowers go kind of head to head. And look, it's not got the glamour and all that kind of stuff, because the stakes are different. You know, the let off when you beat, you know, we have it. It's not, you play Chelsea or Man City or Everton United at Anfield, every goal is celebrated like it's the best moment ever. Whereas when you've scored two or three against Southampton at home, by the third goal, people aren't jumping up and down and bouncing in the seats, are they? That's just the level of expectations on stuff. But again, I loved it. You know, if people haven't checked the vlog out, I've done the match vlog, but also done like a travel vlog to and forth on over on Mates TV. So go and have a little look. It was
smooth sailing.
It was not smooth sailing in any way, shape, or form. And I had to, there was stuff that I had to leave out. Like I mentioned, the disgrace that was my toe, that didn't make it in. I considered it, but then by the time it was gone, I went, oh, I could have filmed that. I went, actually, no, I shouldn't have filmed that. So it's fine. What it leads into, and obviously it kind of then filtered into the West Ham game as well, is whether we are still a little bit soft at the back. Is the issue still remain around DM, Chloe? We mentioned McAllister, we touched upon Endo. I don't feel as though we've totally boxed our defensive midfield position off just yet, and it does feel a little like we're not, the solidity at the back isn't quite what we'd hoped it would be. As much as, you know, the shape of games is starting to look very familiar, Liverpool winning more games than they lose is starting to look very like the Liverpool that we know. There are still a few warning signs there.
Yeah, there are. And you know, you talk about defensively in that game, I don't think you should look at it in that terms and just for Lask, because you had Kostas, who hasn't had as many minutes. Andy Robertson, I remember at Chelsea, I gave him down the banks because he'd had an awful game and no one else helped him out on that left-hand side. Since then, it's like he's had a point to prove and he's been brilliant since. Obviously, getting Canate back is vitally important. We need Trent back as soon as possible, because we saw, you know, I think it's you who said, if there's anyone who can do that Trent role, it's Stefan Bajetic, mm-hmm. and it didn't quite go in his favour. But we're all fine with that. We're all sound to give him the benefit of the doubt and go again until he does understand it, because it's his first game back and how long he's playing in a different role. So the DM is really important to our system, and I don't think we found it. I remember the start of that second half, I was just like, just take Endo off, bring on. It wasn't the game for him. We didn't need someone to constantly win the ball back. We needed someone who was, we had a lot of possession. We needed someone on the ball who was going to be good at that. And those are the two differences in McAllister. McAllister's on, if like West Ham, when we need to dominate the ball, when we're going to have loads of the ball, loads of possession, you want him on more. But if it's going to be end-to-end footy, or, you know, actually we're away at Spurs, ooh, we might need more defensive solidity and a person who can really win the ball back and be aggressive, maybe that's more Endo. I didn't really see that from but it wasn't his kind of game.
It's really interesting that you say that, because this is what happens with good footballers. They come, you go, what's his game? What game should you be using him in? I remember we did this Andy Carroll of like, would you want him in games where you're playing against the big, barely old school Stoke centre halves? And you're like, well, no, because that's what they live for, playing against target men, slow target men. Okay, well, do you want him against like the more technically? No, because they're just going to have him wait. And what I'm thinking we're finding with this DM thing, Dan, is McAllister, as much as I don't think, we've obviously not bought him to play DM for us, I think he's been good. I think he's been really good. And I've seen a couple of comments here about, like, you know, he's been a bit, tried to be a touch too flamboyant in possession once or twice, and it's put us under pressure. But at this point now, he's starting games there because there's probably not a type of match that isn't suited to how he's playing the DM for us.
That's what's so interesting about it for me, because obviously his natural inclination is to be creative and to make things happen in the final third, because that's what he's best at. That's what he does for Argentina. That's what he did for the most part for Brighton as well. It's really interesting, because Chloe's point about sort of not suiting Endo in a game whereby we will dominate possession and sort of dictate terms is absolutely spot on. That's more your McAllisters. You can get your technical players in midfield, your McAllister, your Gravenberch, Szoboszlai, obviously. And the signing of Gravenberch is really interesting in this, because you've signed him, do you need McAllister to play one in advance day quite as much? Perhaps not. So what we're essentially saying there is Endo, a lad we're not quite sure about just yet, a lad who probably hasn't sort of shown us anything yet to sort of hang our hat on and say, okay, you're this one. What we're saying is that the games that suit him are the most difficult games we're going to play.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Manchester City, Arsenal, possibly Tottenham away. They're the hard games, and we're not sure about him. But we want him because he's this destroyer type, which he is. I get it. It's a fine thing to say because it makes perfect sense, until you go, well, they're the tough games.
Exactly.
Like,
we want
McAllister, who's better for the easy games.
He was getting bypassed against LASK. I'm not sure.
I'm not convinced by it. I still have hope that he'll be a fine footballer for us. And as a squad option goes, I think he'll do a perfectly fine job. I just don't know whether we're going to honestly sit here and say that we're not sure about him in the games whereby we're good.
Yeah.
But if we're up against it, he's the man. Well, I don't know if that works.
That's the thing. When I say that, I don't actually think he's going to start against Spurs.
Yeah, but you're right in what you say.
Yeah, no, I agree.
In my head, he's the type to win the ball back.
Well, this is the point I kind of want to make on the McAllister thing. Rather than make this a negative on Mataro Endo, which I don't think is fair, it's a positive on McAllister because he's now, we used to have this with Trent and Gomez. It would be like, you know, you played Gomez in the tough games and you played Trent in the games when you dominated the ball, but then Trent became so good that, you know, so you're not going to play him against Man City when you need your best technical footballers on the pitch. And that's what McAllister's sort of doing in the DM, because we're going to come up against Tottenham and Brighton, and it's the logical, what do you need? Oh, you know, and eventually City and what have you. Do you need your destroyer in there? That makes logical sense to all of us. But in reality, actually, you just want someone who's really good on the ball. Do you want to dominate possession? Do you want someone who's going to unlock things and make things happen?
Do you want to pick your best 11?
Yeah, exactly.
Is the other thing. I mean, horses of courses is one thing.
Oh,
but
my
the
God,
minute,
how many times he says this on this show?
I love it. I love it. It's my favourite of it. But at the minute, you've got your best 11. I mean, we spoke about Darwin Nunes early, but McAllister is in that best 11. Nobody can tell me otherwise. And Curtis Jones would sort of be saying I am as well. But I think the interesting thing as well with McAllister, we should throw this into the mix, is that at the minute, pretty much exclusively, whether it's Pacetic, Gomez, or of course Trent when he's in the side, we are getting the right back in alongside him, which makes his workload and his defensive responsibilities a lot easier.
Yeah.
So if we're going to continue to do that, he's not the both sides, eyes in the back of my head, six that you might have needed in previous seasons.
He's not
season.
Trying to do Fabinho's
so
job.
A little, yeah, he had that with Caicedo as well, so it is slightly easier for him in terms of his workload in that case.
No, it is. I just honestly thought it was a really interesting point on that, is that we've got this thing, and I would still be going into the market in January, or certainly, if not, get someone unbelievable lined up for the summer. Go and spend the big money and make sure you've got a 22-year-old or plus who's going to be that, you know, who's going to do what Fabinho did and plus. But like right now, he's in a merit. Endo would be start, should have played more footy. But he even had a moment during the last game where Bacetic, I think you're right to say, Chloe, did struggle a little bit with it. But you know, when you consider he's played about 15 minutes of football, you know, and that was under 21s for Spain, he played like a lad who hadn't played footy in six months. But there was a moment when he came into the midfield and Endo was having a little bit of a struggle, and Vichessa just went in, slid in, won the ball.
It was a brilliant tackle. Yeah,
and I was like, you know, when you're watching something, you're like, that's actually what we've been missing a little bit from the midfield. So we're actually probably not a million miles away from, there's going to be an interesting race, I think, when Trent comes back to fitness, about what we do with the right back role and what's the pecking order for the defensive midfielders, because Stefan Bacetic has quietly become a bit of a forgotten man for us, because no one really considered him because he was injured in the summer as much for, like, you know, a lot of people talk about not wanting to get in the way of his progression, sure, but nobody thought now he's ready to be starting games. But there might come a point where he's so good that you do just rotate him with McAllister. I want to talk, just to move things on slightly before we wrap up, bass tune to Red. Andrew Beasley put a tweet out, and just the comment around that, he says, this sort of thing is basically irrelevant when you're up against City, but only 8 of the last 28 Premier League champions had better starts than Liverpool have had in 22-23. Phenomenal effort. Podcast listeners, I don't think I can really read this out and make too much sense, but if you want to see it, check out
22-23.
The Liverpool in 23-24.
Oh, right.
Sorry, my bad. If I said that, I misspoke and I apologise wholeheartedly. That'll make it even more confusing
about the last season, whatever you do.
So just in terms of the teams that have had equal or better starts, 99, 2000, Manchester United, 1-5, drew 1. Had a goal difference of 12. 2005-2006, Chelsea had 18 points, 6 wins from 6, had a goal difference of 12, and that one hadn't conceded a goal in the first 6 games in that one. Chelsea again in 2009-2010, 18 points, 11-12, City, 16 points, 14-15, Chelsea, 16 points, 17-18, City, 16 points, 18-19, Man City, 16 points, 19-20, Liverpool had 18 points from this stage, and so far, as we know, Liverpool have got 16 points from that, so they're the champions. Now, of course, I think it's fair to say that Liverpool might have had a better start or an equal start in another one of those campaigns, but then only finished second to Man City, so it is a thing. Someone then tweeted, are you preparing us for a finishing second on 100 points, which is a point to be bearing in mind. Yes, so it's interesting that we've started well. And I think the most encouraging thing for me, Chloe, is I can see where the room for improvement is. And it's the things we've discussed. I'm not 100% certain on the DM thing. I'm not 100% certain on the pecking order for that just yet. We haven't seen McAllister played in the position that I think we've bought him for. Trent has missed a couple of games now through injury. We've had a couple of injuries. We've had to chop and change in the back four a little bit as well. And again, I don't think everyone's totally on the same page in terms of stylistically, you know, this is not a Klopp reference. This is year one, not year six, year eight, year nine, whatever. I see these as good things. We're putting down a great start to the season. It's only early doors, but I just feel that, for me, I feel like that bodes well. I don't know how you feel.
The more you understand the system, the better the players know each other as well, because we're talking about players who are new here. McAllister, Szoboszlai, they're both new. Even Darwin Nunes, slightly new to it. Luis Diaz even is still new to it. Everyone's new to this new system. It's a lot to build on from. And it means that if we're doing so good so far, there is room for improvement, and the more you understand the system and what Jurgen Klopp wants from you, hopefully the better it'll be. And we know how much Liverpool love to bounce into three games a season. That'll start happening now. Three games a week, and we know how much we like to bounce into them and use the rhythm of them. So there's so many good points to pick from it. The problem that I do have is, we've played some decent teams, but the likes of Chelsea had an unbelievable game against us and have absolutely fell off a cliff. I think the problem is, we've mentioned defensive liabilities sometimes, the DM role. When you're coming up against Spurs and Brighton in the next two, we're going to really be tested. Yeah. And that's when Liverpool really needs to show their class, because it's Sam doing it against, look, Aston Villa, great team. Mm-hmm. West Ham, great team so far this season. Bournemouth, they're all right, yeah. But we've not done it against...
Yeah, haven't won in 10 or something, but yeah.
Yeah, but Tom Solanke, you know what I mean? I'm just trying to give him props. The bigger teams is where we're going to have to dig deep, and we're going to make sure that any errors, any individual errors, are cut out of the game completely, and we fully focus.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It goes to the point, Dan Kenner put a tweet out saying, Liverpool, 16 Premier League games unbeaten, 40 points from the last 48. That's 95 point season pace. But City are 46 from 51 in the same period, 103 point season. And that's... exactly. And he said, we've already had 97 points and not win the league, and also a 92. Arsenal got 50 from the first 57 last season and didn't win the league. That's what you're up against. But it goes back to my point on this, is that I'm happy and content in this world of lowered expectations. And some people think that's a real negative thing. It's actually not, if you're rebuilding a side, and actually for your own happiness. I'm glad that we're not being talked about as being going toe-to-toe with Manchester City. It seems like everyone's kind of accepted that City are now this superpower and they're going to just go and kind of continue to do things. I'm kind of hoping this is the season where if City make a mistake, the rest of footy actually goes ha ha ha, as opposed to like get upset about it because Liverpool might steal a march. We'll have to see whether that's the case. But anyway, we had a couple of super chats while we were doing this. Alex LFC just sent in €20 and said, loving the content.
Oh, thank you.
That's very nice, isn't that? Really, really nice indeed. And we've had another one which I have misplaced, which I will find momentarily, so bear with me a second. True Trap Bullies says, I don't think the best 11 is even a thing now, as you have to adapt to opposition. We have a phenomenal squad that can handle all situations. That's class. Dan, I totally agree with that.
100%, yeah. I think you always sort of reference the fact that if we had a Champions League final, Europa League final tomorrow, what would your team be? So that does exist, but the squad point is absolutely spot on, and something I spoke about in glowing terms yesterday, because our squad, the bench yesterday was an absolute farce. Yeah. Like Bajetic, Ben Doak, and somebody couldn't get on the bench. Harvey, Thiago and Trent not available. They're not in the matchday squad yet, and our bench was just so packed. And I think this is why we're seeing ourselves grow into games more and more as the game goes on, because while the opponents, they lose legs, they get tired, their change has actually weakened the side.
Yes, yeah.
Our lads come so on. True. Yesterday at one point, we had Jota and Gakpo coming on. Exactly. And if you're a defender, you're looking over going, they're messing. They are messing. Yeah. I've been chasing Salah, Nunes and Diaz all afternoon, and they're bringing on those two now. Like, it's scary the amount of squad depth we've got.
Yeah.
Including Gravenberch in that as well. Yeah, he's a 6'3" lad who looks like a unit about to come on in midfield. It's brilliant to see the squad depth, and I 100% agree with that. And that's why, with so many chopping and changes so far this season, every starting 11 that we've put out there, I can totally understand it. I can fully be like, yes, Sam, sure, I'm okay with this. Cody Akpo came on, and like one of his first touches was... He did some flick over in the corner, won the corner for us, and we scored.
Just the levels of quality we're talking about here. It's freaky. Like Jota and Gakpo. I mean, and then the minutes we're playing now in footy matches, that can only be a positive thing for us with that strength. Yeah.
Absolutely. It really feels like, and again, people have talked all the summer long, was like Liverpool's mismanagement. And I'm not denying that, that there's been major mistakes made in the transfer market in recent years, but right now, they finally had to take major surgery. But this is the point. It feels like we've actually got a squad, enough players capable of sustaining a season under the rules as well. As you say, it's going to be, if we're going to be playing 5 to 15 minutes of additional time, every single game, that only benefits Liverpool because, you know, as I say, you know, look at what Newcastle did. Newcastle took off the players, and you said rightly, it made them weaker when they played against us at St James's, and West Ham did exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. West Ham have got, we mentioned them earlier, they've got Paqueta and they've got Bowen and they've got Michel Antonio. But those three are their linchpin to the best West Ham. They're their game winners. They're the best players at their football club. And if they run out of steam, that's it. They've not got anything of the sufficient quality. And we're in a position where we're waxing lyrical about McAllister and Szoboszlai, who've only played six and seven games for us so far. But we're talking about them like they're established footballers. They've literally only played 500 minutes of footy for us in terms of getting themselves into the ideas. Gravenberch has had two substitutes, he had one start and a substitute and two substitute appearances, you know, so far. Small sub appearances at that, and Endo's had very, very similar as well for us.
And Harvey Elliott, Harvey Elliott was a nailed on starter for the early part of last season. I'm fully aware last season was what it was, a bit of a catastrophe. However, he is a perfectly, perfectly capable Premier League footballer. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, whatever we think of him, our misconceptions or whatever, he's a very good footballer. And he has come on every single time chomping at the bit. I was quite surprised he didn't do the same yesterday, to be honest with you, but it might be the fact he got more minutes in Europa in the week, who knows. But he's been brilliant when he's been called upon, and he'll be absolutely desperate to continue to impact games of football. So to have those lads on the bench, not even needing half of them, but it's a conversation that I'm so glad we're allowed to have now, because it hasn't been the case for so long, but it gives us, in my opinion, a huge, huge advantage. With five subs in the minutes, like we say, it's massive for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Really, really positive stuff in the Reds so far, and a number of the players playing in Reds, most of them, in fact. Yes, that is the podcast for this week. Thank you so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing to the YouTube channel, and of course, for following us on the likes of Acast and beyond. If you want more, if you want to check out the Five-A-Side special, then do. That's redmenplus.com. If you want to hear the three of us now go and do the Biased Football podcast, where we're going to laugh our asses off at Chelsea, we're going to talk about the North London Derby and some of the contentious decisions in that, and the rest of the big talking points in the weekend's action, then come and join us over on redmenplus.com. That would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, thank you so much. Have a boss week, and the Originals will be back next week. Ta-da.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.